Cyberpunk's roots trace back to the science fiction writers of the 1960s and 70s, and five decades later, the genre remains a go-to for modern storytellers. On today's episode, we discuss the key elements of cyberpunk, such as dystopian futures, high-tech worlds, hacker culture, and isolated loners, as well as films, television, animation, video games, and comic books that fall squarely within the genre, such as Blade Runner, Strange Days, Mr. Robot, Akira, Final Fantasy, and Judge Dredd. We also ask a few questions. Cyberpunk is often a bleak look at a possible future. Is there any hope to be found in cyberpunk stories, or are they mostly cautionary tales? And as our world begins to mirror the worlds portrayed in cyberpunk, will the genre lose its relevancy?
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Dee, didn't you and I and Christy see Strange Days way back in the day?
Yeah, man. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Damn, in the theater, yo?
Yes, in the theater.
Dang, I saw that on VHS. My dad brought it home, yo. Like, what the hell is this?
Angela Bassett, yo. Dropping some martial moves and whatnot, yo. I was like, wow. Don't, even though it probably wasn't her, it's probably a stunt double. But, you know.
Oh, of course.
It looked like her. looked it.
Looked it. She might have still been cut up from Tina Turner, yo.
Shit, she's still cut up. Fine ass. Woo.
Gee. Yeah. But I think you chose the movie too, D.
Did I really?
Yes.
I think it's more like my girl that chose the movie, you know, like Sean chose the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you might be right. You might be
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah,
you might
yeah.
might be
yeah.
right.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy, man. Strange Days. You know, they got that title from that movie, that trailer came from The Doors.
Oh, you know? Might be right.
Jim Morrison, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. If you hadn't guessed, we're talking about cyberpunk on this episode.
Yeah.
And Dwight is probably the biggest fan of the genre, bigger than Adrian and I, but not unlike our episode where we talked about Game of Thrones. It's fascinating to me because it is a genre that's lasted a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It reoccurs or it recurs, but it doesn't necessarily reinvent, which I think is interesting. You know, it kind of remains the same as it did, you know, back in the 80s, if you're talking about films and whatnot. Mm. And then, to lay a little bit of a foundation, the roots of cyberpunk actually start with the early science fiction writing of the 1960s and 70s. So people like Harlan Ellison and Robert Heinlein, Philip K. Dick and L. Ron Hubbard all wrote stories about, you know, dystopian and apocalyptic futures and oppressive governments and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the term cyberpunk, and I didn't realize this, was actually coined by the titular novel Cyberpunk, written by Bruce Bethke in 1983. Okay. And I think Neuromancer came out in 84.
Yes. Now you sure that it was 1983 as far as that Bruce Bethke reference? I thought that was like in the late 70s.
My understanding it was 1983 is when it came out.
Wow.
Yeah, and both Neuromancer and Cyberpunk the novel were preceded by Blade Runner, which was an adaptation of Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream Machine, which came in 82.
Yeah.
So I think Gibson even has said in interviews or had said in interviews, I don't know if he's still alive or still with us, but that looking at it, it seemed like, that they were all pulling from the same kind of references and the same kind of themes. you know, when he saw Blade Runner.
You know, the interesting thing about that, a side note with that William Gibson and pulling of references, when we suggested doing this episode and I started thinking about it and we talked about William Gibson, I tried to read Neuromancer years ago and I lost patience. But this is too damn heavy. What the fuck is this? And and I ended up tossing it out. But I do remember the portion I did read was very strong. And one of the things that I was trying to make a correlation with, and I later confirmed it, was in the few pages that I read of Neuromancer, Gibson writes the character saying that he actually flew over Leningrad or something in like this glider or whatnot. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But check where I'm going. And I was like, damn, that sounds familiar. Man, that sounds exactly like Escape from New York when Plissken was saying, when Hawk said, "We know all about you, Snake. You flew over Leningrad in the Gulf Fire." I was like, no, that can't be. And sure enough, when I went and checked it out, Gibson himself confirmed that he got that from Escape from New York, which came out in 81.
Oh, wow.
So he was definitely pulling from all these different references. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. It kind of made me take a step back and say, damn, I might have to give Neuromancer another try then. Okay.
You know, and arguably, yeah, in true punk fashion, that's kind of the way that things are kind of cobbled together anyway. It's disparate, you know, ideas and concepts all pulled together, you know? So it's kind of cool.
No, that's a great point, D, because in essence, you know, the suffix of punk to anything really engenders this desperate ideas or these elements coming together. They're not, you know, fully formed, or they're not very professional or what have you. They just kind of cobbled together, like you said. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, with the actual punk movement around this time, which I'm sure had an effect on the aesthetic of cyberpunk, you know, with the styles of the fashion, the hair. You know, you look at early cyberpunk covers as far as like novels and whatnot, they all look like
the Mohawks
you would have seen in the late 70s. Yeah, exactly. The Mohawks, the crazy glasses, you know, that type of thing, the clothing.
We are the Clash.
Yes.
Circa CBGBs.
But yeah, punk, the suffix of punk, you know, to anything just, you know, definitely engenders that. Cyberpunk, steampunk, whatever. And you find that working its way into cyberpunk, you know, the cobbling together of, you know, this dystopian future made of these used parts, this used future, you know, but with these new ideas, so to speak. You know.
Yeah, man. I would say that almost like to some degree, hip hop is an extension of that. Like hip hop is actually they owe like somewhat of a spiritual debt to punk, the punk movement, because they just took stuff and took what was already there and cobbled all together and made their own thing from it. You know, it's kind of cool.
I would agree with that. That's an astute observation, D. I never even thought about that, but you're right. Maybe even the ultimate contemporary or modern example of that, you know, in terms of, you know, still living on. But yeah, I never even considered that. And when I was thinking about the term cyberpunk, yeah, that's kind of how I view it, too. It's kind of like the rebellious kind of anarchistic aesthetic of punk married with high tech, you know, essentially. So. But one of the things in my reading and my research, man, is that, you know, cyberpunk's prominence today, while it's still, you know, very very much in the written word, it has moved mostly to like movies and television and video games.
Yes.
That's largely where you see it. So examples of films would be, you know, the aforementioned Blade Runner and by extension, I guess, Blade Runner 2049. But, you know, movies like RoboCop and The Matrix. Strange Days, we talked about, The Surrogates, Ready Player One, Johnny Mnemonic, which, you know, is based on another Gibson story, Videodrome, 12 Monkeys, Hackers, the movie
Elysium.
The movie Her, directed by Spike Jonze and starring Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lawnmower Man, and also too Virtuosity with Denzel.
Hey, that man, that jerk was hype back in the day. That was that was good,
y'all. It was good, man. Yeah, all around shit.
And then television shows like Mr. Robot, starring Rami Malek, and is an example of it in serial form. Mm-hmm. And then also Altered Carbon and Black Mirror, which are both on Netflix.
And Knight Rider 2020.
And Knight Rider 2020.
I don't know why I kept bringing it up.
Must we, Adrian?
Yeah. It's fine, all right. Okay, so tell me, have you ever jacked in? Have you ever wire tripped?
No.
A virgin brain. Good. Well, we're gonna start you off right, okay? Just tell me, just save us some time. Tell me what you know.
Just what I've read, that the technology was developed for the feds to replace the body wire, and now it's gone black market.
That's right, so this conversation's not taking place, okay?
You're damn right it's not.
You know, and arguably, what's the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme, the future one, where he's...
Cyborg. Cyborg, yeah.
Cyborg, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cyborg. But we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to start by asking you guys what you thought some of the key traits and or tropes of the cyberpunk genre are.
Well, I mean... First, I want to continue that lineage of people who are giving credit for continuing the genre to Mike Pondsmith, man, who's currently doing, who's finished. Actually, according to the Wikipedia, which is always famously right for things, he coined the phrase or used the phrase cyberpunk, copyrighted the phrase cyberpunk in 1988 for the game industry RPG. So, I mean, now, based on his Talosaurian Games, which is the name of his game company, he actually took that and Pondsmithed that into Cyberpunk 2077 with CD Projekt Red, and CD Projekt Red is known for Red Dead Redemption and of course Witcher. Mm-hmm. So it's a great game, man. But one of the tropes that is somewhat different, or one of the things we didn't bring up just yet and probably would have gotten to, is corporate greed and tribalism, and it's very, very much a thing in terms of all these movies that we've seen. It's always about, you know, got to get the reds. They're over there, and the greens are over there, and you know the filthy boys are on that part of town. We don't go on that side of town because it's hot. You know what I mean? And the dirty girls. Everybody goes to the dirty girls because you know they got to get what they got to get. You know,
yeah.
So it's kind of crazy, man. And there's always drug interactive too, man. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, everybody's always like putting something in their mouth or in their throat or getting high at some point. It's a very very dreary lifestyle in a lot of ways, man.
You know, and I was just gonna say, the reason why that's such a trope is you're in this dystopia and you're looking for an escape.
Yeah.
You know, you notice that all of those stories have something to where the humans that are living in that landscape are looking for escape from it. You know what I'm saying? So there's always drug work or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I was going to mention too, since cyberpunk originated in the late 70s and definitely the early 80s, you have this confluence of, there's a lot of, not mania, that's not the right word, but a kind of philia. I don't even know if that's the right word for Japanese technology.
Right.
And you see like the Japanese influence coming over very overtly, which it was in real life. You know what I'm saying? Sony and other Japanese corporations were really doing hostile takeovers of American corporations and really, you know, finding their way into our everyday lives. And you kind of see a pushback against that somewhat in the cyberpunk literature. You know, it's all of these Japanese corporations finding their way into, you know, the society. You see that very much with Blade Runner. There's hints of that from what I've read in Neuromancer and other, you know, cyberpunk, you know, stories as well, you know, both in film and, you know, in the written word.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell, yo. Ghost in the Shell, Akira. I mean, those are straight up cyberpunk, yo. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're actually considered Japanese cyberpunk, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, you know, we talked about dystopias, and Dee talked about, you know, corporate greed, multinational corporations, mm-hmm. High-tech hacker culture.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, the integration of, like, humanity with tech, mm-hmm. you know, with technology, isolated loners.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, noir and crime storylines are also things that we see in a lot of cyberpunk, too.
Yeah.
Would you guys consider Warriors to kind of be that in a way? No? You wouldn't, Adrian?
More dystopian, but not necessarily cyberpunk. More dystopian.
Gotcha.
There's no cyber in it. Nobody's taking any kind of, you know, mechanical anything besides bats.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just this dystopian possible near future. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good that you made that delineation too, Swain, because, you know, a lot of people might get it twisted that, oh, because it has this dystopian future, it might fall within the realm of cyberpunk, and that's not necessarily the case.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also too, man, cyberpunk is often combined with other genres.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, you know, noir and crime fiction, you see them being told as thrillers. Mm-hmm. Or action movies, mysteries, romance, and even like a sci-fi, and maybe it wasn't intended to be a comedy, but Tank Girl.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, well then let's give a shout out to the Across the Pond, you know, Judge Dredd.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah.
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 So. Yeah, I was going to mention Dredd later as far as some of the comics that have cyberpunk elements to it. But
sorry, spoiler, of course, SSD. You know.
No, that's fine. That's fine. There's kind of an undeniable bleakness to the cyberpunk genre to me. It seems like the world, it's like, you know, the world's too far gone to save it. Mm-hmm. You know, why bother kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that there's any hope to be found in cyberpunk? In those stories, or are they mostly just cautionary tales?
I think you find a lot of it, like, there's always an element of, again, the characters trying to escape off-world. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear that off-world, on the moon or another planet, life is better. Mm-hmm. Or while I'm here, let me escape into this cyber realm to escape this actual reality. Mm-hmm. Or also, there's usually, inside a dystopia or whatnot, there's like this promised land that is full of green with trees and fertile. Mm-hmm. And the characters are always trying to either do a heist, find some way to hack, or something to facilitate their travel to this promised land. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the only hope that you find in a lot of those cyberpunk stories. Otherwise, otherwise it's always raining.
Yeah.
Dark.
Until recently, that's a good point, Adrian. I think recently, Cyberpunk 2077 is going to crack that egg and change it a little bit. They actually decided there's day cycles. There's full cycles in terms of the change in the environment. So, a city that was dark at night and has the neon illumination actually has a gray cast or a bluish tint with various orange Miami-type Vice-like highlights to it in some instances. So it's kind of interesting to see that contrast, because you're right, for the most part, it's very dreary, always dark, always raining, always smoking. You know, the alley with the steam coming out of it, with the garage, and the cat in the background.
Yep. You know, it's funny, the opening line of Neuromancer is something about the sky above the port was the color of television. Dead or something like that. That sounds right.
That's a good paraphrase.
But I was just like, damn, he just described that in one sentence. That's mm-hmm. a hell of an opening line, man.
Yeah, man.
The color of television, dead.
Wow.
Especially when Rod Serling's in play. You know, Rod Serling had a lot to do with that, yo. Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
You mentioned Judge Dredd, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think about it when Ronin came out way back in the 80s. But that's, you know, that definitely falls within the genre.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Yes, yeah.
And also, staying with Miller, Hard Boiled, you know, the book that he did with Jeff Darrow.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a closer to, you know, to modern day example or current day example would be Transmetropolitan, Warren Ellis and Derek Robertson's book.
Sure. And And you know, also don't forget, Mobius did a story back in the day called something. Dang, I wish I would have looked that up.
I know
something about, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it was Dan O'Bannon. Dan O'Bannon was a writer.
He found a copy of it, and he used it as an inspiration in some of his writings. Mm-hmm. Something about the day after tomorrow or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah, something thereabouts. And I've heard that and seen that on documentaries be a huge influence on a number of filmmakers and other creatives. Like, oh, man, when I saw that story, you know, I really wanted to see if we can do something like that in film, mm-hmm. you know.
As far as animation goes, and a lot of it, you know, like we were talking earlier, you know, a lot of cyberpunk, you know, lives in film and television, but also like video games and animation.
Mm-hmm.
Katsuhiro Otomo's Akira.
Yes.
Cowboy Bebop, mm-hmm. Ghost in the Shell, Tetsuo, Alita. And I didn't even consider this until, again, just started kind of poking around doing some research. But Warner Brothers Animation's Batman Beyond was pretty much cyberpunk.
Oh, it was. Absolutely. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. And that was one of the best elements about it, though. That kind of upped the ante for me and made me want to watch it, dude.
It really did. Yeah. It really did.
With a great track by, who did that track, dude? Crystal Method.
Crystal Method did that?
Yeah.
Because, yo, every time I hear that Batman Beyond opening, man, that shit kind of gets me hyped, yo.
Yeah, like, really, seriously.
Yeah, man.
Shout out to the late, great Darwin Cook for that opening sequence.
Word.
That was Darwin?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
Okay, man. No respect.
You know, you were talking about video games, and when I was coming up as a kid in the 80s, you know, winged on the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System,
right.
there were a multitude of cyberpunk games. There was a game called Cyber Run that was an RPG. Mm. There were a lot of games that had those cyberpunk elements to them, mm-hmm. you know, that you could throw a stick at, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I remember just like a lot of those games were just like, man, they were always being RPG form for some reason, mm-hmm. you know, rather than just straight ahead side scrolling action, you know, things, you know.
Man, in light of the games that you're talking about, Adrian, kind of put me into another spin. Would you think, okay, this is a bit of, I would say Morbius Gravis by Serpieri was almost cyberpunk, dude. Almost. It's very dystopian. It's got elements of the big hair, you know, mohawks, and there's no music. There's drug references. There's a hell of a lot of sex. There's a hell of a lot of crazy, you know, phallic moments. And,
well, it is Serpieri, so...
Yeah, yo. A lot of, you know, exposure of flesh. And when she does put clothes on, they are kind of cyberpunky-ish. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say Serpieri was a bit of a cyberpunk-type dude as well. Especially for Morbius Gravius.
Yeah, it's funny because, like Adrian was trying to show, you know, making the distinction earlier about not confusing dystopia with cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a, you know, it, and that kind of makes me think too, in the sense of, you know, separating like just science fiction mm-hmm. from cyberpunk. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because cyberpunk and science incorporate science fiction, but it doesn't necessarily have to be science fiction. Mm-hmm. Mr. Robot, the USA show, mm-hmm. isn't science fiction, mm-hmm. but it is cyberpunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is cyberpunk in many ways in terms of its attitude.
Definitely for hacking. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What is it about society that disappoints you so much?
Oh, I don't know. Is it that we collectively thought Steve Jobs was a great man, even when we knew he made billions off the backs of children? Or maybe it's that it feels like all our heroes are counterfeit. The world itself's just one big hoax. Spamming each other with our burning commentary bullshit masquerading as insight, our social media faking as intimacy? Or is it that we voted for this? Not with our rigged elections, but with our things, our property, our money. I'm not saying anything new. We all know why We do this not because Hunger Games books makes us happy, but because we want to be sedated. Because it's painful not to pretend. Because we're cowards. Society.
Elliot, you're not saying anything.
Dee, as far as video games, why do you think that the genre lives so well in the video game format, in that platform?
Well, I mean, it's because it's engaging, it's vibrant. It requires you to very much like become part of the world by virtue of what you use to get there. You know, I mean, you're looking at a TV with a game controller, and you're able to become part of that whole culture, that whole routine of making this character move and do those things inside that structure. And it's taken legs because as the technology continues to evolve, it's become more immersive, and the storylines have developed to become more cognizant and immersive because of that.
What about as far as visually goes?
Yeah, I mean, definitely visually. I mean, you have, like I said, you have more immersive content. So you have people doing more things, taking more risks, and kind of proofing the ideas. You know, the idea of Johnny Mnemonic and Keanu Reeves getting a whole, you know, gigabyte of RAM installed in his head, and was causing his nose to bleed, and causing to have brain aneurysms potentially when you get that information out. It's now gone further to where he's kind of somewhat reprised that role, but not really in that role. We should get paid for this project, CD Projekt Red Redemption, because I'm boosting you guys up in a big way. Johnny Silverhand is a character that Keanu Reeves becomes in Cyberpunk 2077. Yeah. So yeah. It's almost like an extension of that character, but more of a rock and roll stint than Johnny Mnemonic was. But I mean, I just think it's a thing which is relevant because we're looking at, I mean, now as people continue to try to escape their current environment, because we're all living in kind of a, excuse me, an actual dystopia, and only in the fringe and cusp of it. But any moment it could slip into actual chaos, unfortunately. But not really, but kind of, sort of. It's a bit of, you know, hyperbole. But, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you know, we're living it. So I think as we continue to try to escape from that, we go more towards those things which give us pleasure. And what gives us pleasure is video games and examining the human condition through cyberpunk is one of the ways we do that.
Yeah. Other games, Metal Gear Solid and Final Fantasy.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And my daughter actually plays Detroit Become Human, which is cool. A game that...
You're very much cyberpunk.
Yeah, squarely within that, but
I don't know,
I think,
man.
Kind of what you
Metal Gear Solid is not really cyberpunk. I mean, it's cyber.
It's more military. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And then, okay. And there's some cyberpunk looking characters in there, no doubt. You know, I mean,
oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Psycho Mantis is straight out of a Billy Idol video. You know? But go ahead.
Definitely. You know, I was thinking about with the video games thing, you know, some of the earliest images of cyberpunk have, you know, characters putting on like a headset,
mm-hmm.
you know, to escape into this virtual realm. And now, decades later, you find people doing the same thing with the Oculus headset.
Yes.
Guilty. All these other immersive video games like that. And if you look on a lot of the covers of like, you know, early cyberpunk novels, it's loners hunched up in a corner. Mm-hmm. With the glow of this headset. And what do you see today?
Mm-hmm.
Loners somewhat hunched up in a corner in their room or whatnot in their own world playing this mm-hmm. game. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy how just even within the realm of games, you know, cyberpunk has really become an actual reality mm-hmm. to some degree in many mm-hmm. ways.
Mm-hmm. Man, I was actually an interesting thing. I was doing, you know, I use Oculus Medium for doing my sculpts and stuff and developing, you know, assets and things, and yeah. I was actually in a meeting the other day with three people around the globe using the Oculus, using the Oculus Rift, man. So it's very much a culture which is out there that is only in its sea legs right now. It's going to get much bigger than what it is, you know.
Certainly.
The I think kind of what you guys were touching on a minute ago or earlier. With, you know, the kind of dystopian and kind of bleakness of the cyberpunk world. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like a syringe where it's extracted all of the humanity out of the world. So people just depend on drugs and porn and sex and things to kind of instantly gratify them.
Yeah, like today.
And so that's what I would ask you guys is, as many people would say that our world today resembles the world that we see in cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you think the genre can still teach us anything new if we are living in it. Is it becoming too meta, or will the genre lose its efficacy and its relevance? Mm-hmm. You know, as our world starts to more resemble it.
Mm-hmm. I think you got to find different tenets within it that they haven't been explored yet. Like, this is a crazy example, but please follow me. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, when I was about 11, there was this movie that came out. Of all things, a Corey Haim movie called...
Nice.
Now, was it one Corey or two Coreys?
It was just the one Corey this time, Corey Haim.
Deceased, rest in peace, Corey.
Yeah, Haim. Yo. Okay. But it was called Prayer of the Roller Boys, okay? And I know that title sounds very whack and everything, but just check it. It took the elements of things that were kind of popular at the time, definitely like rollerblades, you know, but it also brought in racism and the drug thing. You know what I'm saying? And what it was just this dystopian near future, and like technology was rampant, but it had created a severe underclass. You know what I'm saying? And kind of like today, there was an underclass of white people that felt like, damn, what happened? You know what I'm saying? And in come the Roller Boys, which you find out it is a neo-Nazi racist group rollerblades.
Hey, they got to get around too.
Yeah, but the crazy thing is that they go around and they say, hey, look, we need to take America back. You know, from this technology, this influence of Japanese technology, this influx of all these things, the minorities and everything. So join us. And they recruit these young white kids to come into the fold. And Corey Haim joins because he's goaded by a police detective to get inside so they can work from within to, you know, expose this thing.
Right.
But within that, you find out that the Roller Boys are actually dealing drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And that people also take the drugs to escape that reality, too. Damn. But they're also selling them to the other minorities. And they're in war with the other minorities for the drug trade as well. Okay. And so it was a B-movie. I don't think it was necessarily widely distributed. I saw it on videotape when I was a kid.
Right.
But I thought back about that when we started talking about cyberpunk, and a lot of those elements were in there. And I think going forward today, those elements of race and class. Now, class has always been in cyberpunk and that type of stuff.
Right.
But I think it's going to be much more prevalent now. And especially with race. Because the other thing, too, when you look at a lot of cyberpunk, there are not a lot of minority characters, you know, save for, you know, Japanese characters that come over with the tech and everything, or that type of thing.
And the katanas, katanas.
Exactly, all these katanas. Yeah, yo, cyber tech ninjas and stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But you don't really see a lot of people of color represented in, you know, cyberpunk. So I think those certain things are what are needed to come forward, you know, if cyberpunk is to evolve into like other realms, you know, of possibility as well.
That's one of the reasons why like mentioned The Matrix, and Virtuosity, and then of course Japanese cyberpunk as specific examples where there were people of color as central characters in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right about that, and Mr. Robot does a decent job of that as well.
Yeah.
I
mean, balancing the people of color as well as female characters in prominent roles.
Yeah, and I might add, man. I mean, so you say you want evolution, you know. That's a little Beatles play there.
right.
You know, I keep going back to Cyberpunk 2077. Maybe it's because of Mike Pondsmith, but they've got a whole cast of a whole slew of mixed ethnicities in that 2077 game is coming out. And it stars like a group called the Voodoo Boys, you know. And they go on as deep as possible in terms of not just being caricatures, but actually being immersing themselves in the Haitian culture to the point to where they had a couple of people which were of Haitian descent actually listened to the dialogue that was being portrayed, and they were like they were dead on. They said it was exactly the way they talk, the way they sound. So we're about to see a cultural shift in terms of engendering and bringing a wider scope of people communicating and surviving in this hostile environment.
Now, one more question: when we're talking about games, and not just necessarily video games, but you also have to mention like tabletop RPGs, like stuff by White Wolf and, you know, other Steve Jackson games, you know, people like that. You know what I'm saying?
Car Wars, yo.
What's that, yo? I remember seeing that on the back of a comic book, yo.
Yeah, yo.
Yeah, you can send off for it. Yeah,
yeah. That was dystopian cyberpunk right there, yo. It was. It was, yo. It took that. Oh, you know what else was? I mean, arguably, what was that movie with where people were getting hit by cars? And that was part of the game. It had David Carradine back in the day in it. Later on, it was reprised by...
Death Race 2000.
Death Race 2000.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, totally cyberpunk, yeah.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, man. Great movie, man. For action purposes. It definitely was escapism, for sure. It didn't exactly like push the envelope as far as you know, technology or anything goes, or any kind of real... You know, well, you know what though? It started off. The reason he became Frankenstein is because he was drafted in by, you know, the warden in a political move, because it's actually the world that surrounded it at that time. They were actually kind of like us right now, all pent up. In certain situations, and everybody was relying on a police state to get their money and stipend for the week or month or whatever. And they stiffed him. They stiffed him on his stipend, and he didn't. He got fed up, you know. And he tried to raise a rebellion. He got beat down because they had the nightsticks, and he became incarcerated. So on and so forth, and things went on from there. You know, they killed his wife too, yo. And they killed his wife in the original too. So it's crazy, dude. Took his daughter away, and the problem was him doing. You know what it was? It's talking about the movie. What's his name? The bald French guy, English guy, badass, kung fu fighter.
Oh, it's Jason Statham?
Jason Statham, thank you. He's English, right? Anyway, Jason Statham's character, his daughter, was the carrot that was being dangled in front of him. Like, if you want to get out and see your daughter again, you're going to do exactly what we say, dude. You're going to be Frankenstein, you're going to drive, you're going to kick ass, and at the end of this race, your daughter's livelihood depends on it. So it was one of those things. So they kind of upped the ante and made it more a real thing for him.
Yeah, and I like that version too. Mm-hmm. My dad and I saw that.
Yeah, man.
Oh, that wasn't bad. All right.
Yeah. All right.
Well, what was the name of the film?
Death Race
2000.
It wasn't 2020, but Death Race something.
Yeah.
And it was like a remake of the original, but it took place in a prison.
Right.
It had Tyrese in it too. Like Jason Statham, Tyrese, a couple other guys. Think Fast and Furious.
Right.
In a dystopian future, in the present.
Perfect. That's exactly what it is, yo.
Hey, let me toss something out there for a second.
Go ahead.
And these eyebrows might raise, okay. And that's exactly what I want.
Oh, okay, nice.
Given some of the tenets of cyberpunk, this kind of used future, technology, a dystopian existence, rebelling against, would Star Wars be considered cyberpunk? Are there elements or anything about it that might even say, you know, Star Wars might be considered cyberpunk, yo?
I would not say it is.
No, okay. But
only because the spirit of Star Wars is a little less dour and is more like adventure, and is a little more good versus evil. In cyberpunk, nobody's really good.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like bad guy, worst guy, as opposed to good versus evil. Yeah. But go ahead, D.
Swain's point, and this gets a good try in terms of drawing the two together. No, man, I think Swain's right. Star Wars is very linear, and very delineate those lines very simple. This is good. This is evil. This is good. This is evil. Hopefully, as it continues to evolve now, they'll start going more towards the gray and see the people that are caught between those two polarizing ideals.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.